issues and solutions. So I want people to stay because that will go on internet, you know, there might be lobbies organized. So I think it's very important that the people stay till the end. For this half, second part of the summit, we'll be addressing issues that are squared off more concretely. One which was mentioned this morning and is coming back because that's normal, it's the issue of feature-length documentaries, slots to broadcast, theatrical release, money, funding. You know, it's been debated quite openly for the past 2 years, or 3 years now even. There's been an announcement that was made by Wayne Clarkson, as I said earlier at the opening of the forum, that the pilot project that was set up 2 years ago is being reactivated this year with the contribution of NFB, CBC, and others. But does that, you know, settle everything or not? Does that answer the demands that have been, you know, made by the documentary community all over Canada? So for this part, you know, Daniel Cross, another one of iSteel, at least really the boss of iSteel, the big boss. Daniel Cross, filmmaker, producer, very active in our documentary milieu, is going to present the position and then the debate. Then we'll go on to the Green Code. That's a new thing, Green Code. Other issues, you know, we've heard and we've debated and we've talked about them again, but this is completely new, which will be done by Peter Wintonik, well known. He's the one he calls a small potato. I call him La Poutine. And he will, with colleagues, make a presentation about the Green Code. And then there will be, of course, after each issue, a debate. And then we will finish off with Kerwin Cox, also quite well known, double Poutine, about copyright issues. And then there's the general wrap-up at the end, and that we'll try to do, Tom Permuter and myself, at the end. Okay, Daniel?
Merci, Monique.
Okay, I'm going to talk about feature documentaries. Do you guys remember those? Remember we used to be able to go to Telefilm, and there were cineasts like, you know, Peter Mettler. I think he was a filmmaker. But then Telefilm figured out that there weren't enough eyeballs for documentaries several years ago and decided that it was a television format and the only way you could access Telefilm money. I mean, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination quotable on facts. So people afterwards can straighten out all that stuff. But, and so basically, besides really the NFB, or the Canada, Conseil des Arts de Canada, or CALC, or the SASC Arts Board, loosely speaking, you made television by going through a broadcaster and a CTF. But, you know, the roots of cinema in Canada are the ONF, documentary, cinema. And so in us, through, you know, our mentors, is the desire to make art, to be creative, and not, we don't really, well, I, and then the people that, you know, I'm close to and who work with on a political level around this, aren't as interested in, unfortunately, the strand and the format and the place for the commercial and stuff like that. We want to make cinema. So we want there to be a place, a clear, articulate place, in collaboration with the National Film Board of Canada, in collaboration with the Canada Arts Council, with Telefilm, for a real dynamic and clear articulate place for cineasts, documentary cinema makers, to be able to make feature films. And I lost my notes already. But so it's a bit of a hodgepodge how you go about making a feature film. If you're lucky, you're going to get NFB money, and they're going to support the idea that it could be a theatrical version. And then if you're really lucky, you'll team up with the documentary channel because they're committed to that length. And if you're really, really lucky, you'll get a distributor who will come in at an early enough time that you can actually coordinate from the beginning a little bit like Bone Cop, Bad Cop, when we were at primetime 2 years ago and they already were showing off their posters and their distribution plans and their marketing schemes, and the film was like 1.5 years still in the future from being shot. That's mature process, and you saw the results. But, you know, the chances are that to really top up your budget, you're going to have to go to a broadcaster and the cable television fund, and then you get into multiple versioning, and you're not going to have a distributor till a rough cut if you're one of the maybe 5 in the country. So it's just very hard, I guess, and we need to get people working better together on that. So we what happened is Bevoda, she's the Minister of Heritage or Culture, and she's in the federal government, kicked back to Telefilm during a working group session that she wanted to see long-form documentaries included again in the Canadian Feature Film Fund. So that opened the door for us to be able to actually speak. I mean, there was this prototype, which everybody knows about, and it's a prototype. And we got together with Observatoire, Doc, CFTPA Doc Committee, everybody, APFTQ Doc Committee, I'm probably forgetting somebody, and Documentary Organization of Canada. And we decided we needed $5 million divided over the two languages and the traditional two-third, one-third split, that there needed to be new money to be able to support this, to be respectful to the other genres, that there needed to be relaxed distribution requirements based on $1 million, $1.5 million, loosely speaking, budgets for, see, I'm checking with Monique if she's nodding. I know that I'm not. budgets for these documentaries. And we presented that forward. Then there was a working group, and that happened to be where they put together some drama producers with some documentary producers. Of course, the drama producers, they weren't happy to see us come over and try to get some of their money, because there was no new money, because we'd been taken out of this pie a long time ago and trying to get back into it. But there were a few arguments that came up for me that were insightful. You know, we don't make feature documentary films because we don't really have distributors coming in at the front end. We don't have minimum guarantees. We don't really have legitimate access to a traditional screens across the country that we can rely on in like a real network. Some other reasons too, if I can think. Oh, well, most of our money is triggered by broadcasters through the Canadian Television Fund. So you're not really making feature films. And then there's this graying and all that, because the National Film Board does support feature docs, and maybe this new prototype clarifies things a bit. But it's like, you get money there, so don't come and get money here. Go back and make TV like you do until you can answer these questions. And the major question for me, and this is, you know, me, was we don't really have a real distribution model for feature docs. And until we do, we make TV. And that's just kind of the black and white argument of things. So, through my years with Roach and DIY, do it yourself, I think what we should do, let me just check my notes. I think we should create something like, my first experience in distributing a documentary was Spit, Squeegee Punks and Traffic, and I got to work with Cinema Libre. And they were a non-profit distribution company, and they were scattered all over the place, and they were too scattered, and so they lost their focus a bit, and they did go bankrupt. But not until they created a cinema industry through distribution in Quebec. Marc-André Fossier, I don't know. Drama. But they did. Drama brought them down. Okay, there you go. Mm-hmm. Drama brought them down. But it was a really interesting model. First of all, it was nonprofit, and the advisory board and the board was always a very strong filmmaker influence on it. And I'm kind of thinking of something like the Documentary Organization of Canada, and merging with the docs-based idea that you're talking about, and. It would get access to federal subsidies like any grown-up distribution company would. You know, the distribution companies get a lot of federal money. And the producers would share in the control of the distribution of the product because they know where the market is. They spend all this time on the ground, et cetera, et cetera. And it would function on copyleft practices so that things wouldn't be exclusive to the detriment of the product for kind of false government-subsidized profit-showing margins in your books, which aren't really true. Because, you know, it's federal, it's, a lot of it is government money, and by being nonprofit, it would be motivated more towards the, also, well, not only, but it would have a strong motivation to the cultural aspects and other elements of the screening of the film. So the other thing that, that brings up, oh, and it would be green. Because, you know, we need to get more, we need to get more active.
That's the next subject.
Okay, we need to get more active. And when you talk about feature films, you trip over the CTF. That's a whole other world. It's another argument. So then we splinter, and it's really hard. We have like eight different elements, and you can't get them together. So I think the green code is the one thing that we can all motivate behind. And through motivating and communicating and getting active around that, all our little subcommittees will work better. And then we need access to screens. A lot of work on this was done by the National Film Board. There's some good, very interesting articles written and speeches by Jacques Ben-Simon, who I think, you know, we should really get the federal government, and they died because of lack of federal government support. And we need to get those, that interactive network of screens back up and running, like documentary hubs that are international, and they attract a consistent audience, consistent Q&As, consistent town hall workshops, things that are in the spirit of documentary. So, you know, there's a lot of good examples of that. Not in Canada, but there's the CinemaNet in Europe, there's the RAIN network in Brazil, there's a network in China, there's a network in the States. So I think, you know, all those things add up to creating a feature film possibility in Canada with distribution.
Merci. Thank you. Okay, so 5 million. Right now it's what, a million, two? So there's a problem of funding, a creative problem, distribution problem, screens, companies and screens. Okay, so who wants to open on that? I saw your hand there somewhere. No? Sylvie, and here? Okay.
Sylvie Van Braba. So I have just released a production which was a feature length, and it took 4 years to do. It's called A Force de Rêve, Driven by Dreams. And it was originally in the, started up with SODEC, because SODEC was bright and responded to the demands of the milieu, but not only of the milieu, of I would say the zeitgeist. There's an interest in feature-length documentaries. So we went ahead and started this production. Of course, we went to get the NFB, because, you know, I mean, that's a natural partner. But I want to tell you the story a little bit of this feature-length film. Now that it's a great success, it won the Jutra Award recently. It played 10 weeks in the cinemas. It could have played much longer. It could have lasted a year. But we had a small distributor who did not have any money to put into it really that much. And it was just from bouche à oreille. What do you say that? You know, word of mouth, people spreading the information. We showed it in Paris. People loved it. I had a Chinese distributors say, who uses drama, says, wow, do you people do these amazing documentary feature-length films? I want to get in on this, you know? There's an interest there. But to do it, the director, who's one of Canada's best film directors, did part of his film on unemployment insurance. And the producers, when it was finished, also went on unemployment insurance, because the tax credits that will be coming next year, because there's another problem with tax credits, is end of financial year. So if you haven't finished your production for the 31st of August, which is the end of your fiscal year, well, too bad for you. You're going to get $20,000 of your film budget in a year and a half, because it takes so long for, you know, these institutions and to process all of this. So the bureaucracy involved is amazing. The amount of money going towards insurance, going towards accountings, going towards banks, I mean, and this is a film, when people come, I had a screening last night of the film, and, you know, with subtitle version, and I thought, oh, you know, how's it going to go? People were laughing. You know, here we are in Toronto, people were laughing, people clapped.
Oh!
At the these old French, yes, at these old French, you know, Quebecois people in their 80s. You know, who would have thought that this would have been a success? No broadcaster was interested. Old people and a director who wants to be very free in being able to do these films. So we need a lot of solutions with regards to feature length. It can work. And we have experience. I mean, I'm not a small potato. I'm a missionary. You know, we've been doing these things for 20 to 25 years. And oftentimes, we've had to budget ourselves from our television product to do the feature length. And it's the feature lengths that have won the prizes, that go into institutions, that get people talking about the real issues we're dealing with. We're dealing with social issues, we're dealing with environmental issues, we're dealing with people's issues, we're dealing with culture. And unfortunately, a lot of our production is going towards standardized. We think this is a great idea. This is sexy. This is, you know, but
okay. I think people got the point. Here in the back.
Hi, my name is Kevin McMahon. I'm a director, I've had the opportunity to do features and to do series and to work with private broadcasters and public and theatrical distributors, and you know, had good experiences and bad experiences. But I just want to make a general comment, which is that I was asking Samantha and Kerwin just before the break, what percentage of money, the government money, because in some sense, all of us are in some way civil servants, or subsidized by government, what percentage of the money goes to drama, and what percentage goes to documentary? And they were saying basically three times as much goes to drama as to documentary. And it seems to me that I don't sense a great feeling in the government, in any of the governments, of wanting to put more resources into film and television. But I think, for one, I've been doing this for almost 25 years, and we are always second-class citizens in the general film and television world. And I think it's important for us to stand up for documentary as a form and actually to try and take back some of the resources that are put into drama, because it seems to me that, you know, everything that gets made, most of it is mediocre. A small amount would be good. But in documentary, even mediocre documentaries are valuable documents from a public point of view, because it's public money. And in terms of a civic service, even a bad documentary creates a record. Bad drama creates nothing. And so I know Doc is reluctant to fight this because they're up against a huge lobbying effort that can be brought by all the people that work in drama, the unions, and so on. But I think amongst us, people who are committed to documentary, it behooves us, wherever we get the chance, talking to politicians or whomever, to make the point that we have as much right to do our work as dramatists do, and we have we ought to have an equal claim in the resources. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Here, Carrie.
Thanks. Betsy Carson from Vancouver. I just wanted to address what Kevin was saying about a reluctance to address this. What Daniel was saying from the side of Doc, one of the biggest problems we've been having is that we did make a viable proposal to Telefilm to replace the pilot project. And the $5 million that we're requesting is a tiny amount of the drama budget. Where we hit the block was with the drama producers, because we were required to create the voice that we wanted to present was a unified voice from the entire industry. So I think that what we really have to do is to talk individually with the drama producers and convince them that we are a viable part of the industry, that we're not begging for something that isn't ours. There was a huge resistance when the first documentary envelope was announced last year for Mark Akbar's corporation. It set up a hue and cry across the entire industry and the drama industry, and we almost didn't get it, even though we qualified for under the regulations. So I think it's a perceptual thing that we all individually have to work at with our friends in the drama industry, and we need to improve the communications. Another place we have to improve communications is between the funds. Regulations don't work between funds as well. For instance, the CIFEF and the National Film Board won't work together. The Canada Council and the Film Board can't work together because of all the various regulations. And so I think we have to lobby in those areas as well.
Okay, on the feature length, others? Yes, here.
Kerwin Cox. It's quite obvious that if people want real commercial success in movie theaters in Canada in English, they have to go with documentaries, because drama just doesn't cut it. And
except for Quebec.
I said in English Canada.
Okay.
And there was a huge opportunity to do something with the theatrical system when Cineplex bought Famous Players, and I think that ball was dropped by a whole bunch of people who did not press the point. And so therefore we kind of lost an opportunity to get in there. Despite that, in terms of alternative kinds of venues, I'm finding a surprising vitality in two areas especially. One is a film series started at Concordia University by students called Cinema Politica. They run political documentaries from around the world, many Canadian. They now have branches in Mexico City and Bucharest, Romania. And of course, they're doing it on no money, typical, but they get huge audiences, and people are just jamming in those places to see not just nature films, but to see films about the tough and the gritty. And so that's turned a tremendous success in that area. The second thing that I've discovered, which is a tremendous success, and which I'm sure you know about, is the Toronto International Film Festival's film circuit. Which is largely in the outlying areas, not in the three major cities. And it's people, once a month, they get together and they see films that they want to see, maybe in theaters, maybe at a university or something. What I found out today, which shocked me, was that, as we all know, English-Canadian cinema as a percentage of theatrical box office is something like 1% in a good year. And 20% of that 1%, one-fifth of that 1% comes from film circuit. So these people in the boondocks getting together one day a month, you know, with very little resources but a lot of enthusiasm, are generating one-fifth of our national English language theatrical box office, and no one knows it. Those people are brought to places like Toronto to see films before they book them. They are very enthusiastic. I said to Piers Handling this morning, but don't they hate Canadian films? Don't they know Canadian films are no good? Aren't they fearful of, you know, a Canadian film? And he said, well, in the big cities maybe, but not out there. They love them. They're quite happy to see them. We don't only book Canadian films. We also book foreign films, independent films, films they don't see, and they're enthusiastic. Okay, so there are alternatives. Let's not forget the main theaters. And, you know, it's a crazy world. And it would be nice if the public sector supported more some of these things that are working. Thank you.
Is there anybody from Telefilm in the room? I don't see any. Or the ones that have participated in the creation of this pilot that want to speak out? Radio-Canada? No? On the feature film? CBC, Radio-Canada, both of you are in it.
Well, yes, just to say that we are finally in it.
Okay.
Because we were not in the press release, so the decision has been made.
Okay. 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 I think there are two or three things in this area. Do I see hands? No? One is the one that Betsy addressed, and it's to convince our friends, other producers. It's been a struggle in all the associations. You know, we've been fighting over this for the past year or so. It's very difficult. Especially, well, in Quebec, they say we don't have enough money, which is true, but they do have a large success, so we have to give them that. But still, you know, it's like begging for a small amount of it, which is 5 million out of millions. So this is something that we have to do. This kind of summit is important. This, if there comes out a statement about feature film and the amount of money we need to make maybe three or four, I have competition here, three or four a year that can have a success. And I think the strategy, is that an open window? Yeah. Needs a clear strategy. It's not to get a longer version of a documentary made for TV. It's different. That has to be understood. Because if not, we are trying to make everybody happy, but what comes out of it is not necessarily very good. Because, of course, the broadcasters have their concerns. They have a certain, of course, method of what they're going to show, which is not necessarily the other one. So I think that that also is not necessarily the good thing, to be fighting with the broadcasters about this, because they have also, you know, a certain number of things to address. So we need an independent fund that will have enough money into it to create and trigger a sufficient amount of feature-length documentaries that are for, yes, screens, also international distribution. Eventually, they'll be shown on television, because there's not one fiction film in Quebec that doesn't have a broadcaster. Radio-Canada is in all the production structures of all the major fiction films in Quebec. And they show them a year and 2 years, 3 years after, and it's everybody's happy. And they get good numbers, and people go and see these movies. So I think that this is something that's very important for all of us. And also this, well, the distribution thing, I think, Danielle, is up to us. If you want, if the milieu wants to set up non-profit or profit distribution companies, that's up to them. But the important thing is that the resources that are given to distributors for fiction by Telefilm or SEDEC or whoever should be made available for that. And big producers are producing, you know, like animal docs or, you know, big budgets, and they do have access to that. So let's try to shift it. Okay, are there anybody else on feature? Yes.
Michael Ostroff from Ottawa. One of the issues that we're dealing with now with the CTF, in fact, on feature-length documentaries is the divergence of thresholds. We all need broadcasters, but if you're making a feature film in English, you have to raise 30% of your budget broadcast licenses.
Speak in the mic.
Yeah, well, it was feeding back.
Okay.
If you're making it in French, your threshold for broadcast licenses is as low as 14%. 12, excuse me, a lot lower. If you're making a feature-length documentary, a low-budget one at $500,000, you have to come up with close to $150,000 to $200,000, which is very difficult if you're not working with the major broadcasters in English, because they aren't showing feature-length documentaries. They're barely even showing documentaries now, except in-house productions, and I'm excluding CTV because I'm talking about CBC primarily. So if you go to the broadcasters who support you, Bravo, TV Ontario, Knowledge Network, things like that, their licenses, which are can be quite high, still don't add up to enough money to access CTF, to get to that 30% threshold. Now it's, you know, we were discussing this with the CTF, but then everything came to a halt when Mr. Shaw and Videotron spoke up. But that's a real problem for those of us who are actually trying to make feature-length documentaries when we can't access CTF. It has to go to TV in the end, you're right. But you lose that CTF and you lose as much as $100,000 in your budget. Where do you get it? If you go to the film board, you might be lucky and you might not. Depends on the nature of the project. You can't always rely on the film board. We can't rely on the CTF either, because the thresholds in English are so high.
Yeah.
And that's another issue that we have to face.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention one thing about the envelopes, because we talked to Andrea afterwards at the break. For me, the envelope has worked really well. I have a good relationship with the commissioning editor at Bravo. And our project, as we got closer to production, and she had more money available because unfortunately other productions didn't get into production, we were able to access more of the Bravo envelope, almost to the maximum, in fact, which was a great help. We were dealing with someone who knew the project, understood the project, saw it from the beginning, and was able to, when the resources became available, to help us get into, so that we weren't totally maxed out on tax credits. So we were able to lower our reliance on tax credits. So it was a great, so the envelope system, which has problems, but in our case, was a great help because we were dealing with a commissioning editor who knew the history of the project from day one, was supportive of it, and supportive of us.
That's what I think most broadcasters agree, that they prefer to have an envelope than not no envelope. It's how these envelopes are managed.
That's right.
That's
and
something
how,
else.
How would they get to those
and
figures?
Yeah. Okay, here, a last one on feature.
I just want to reiterate from the experiences I had in the last year how I think it's essential that we collectively figure out a way to distribute documentaries in a single identity. Like, we're divided all over the place. We're relying on distributors who are priority drama producers, and so we can't get access to screens, or we can't get access to P&A, and we don't solidify our voice and show a critical mass. And then go, look, we have these films, they've won all these festivals, they're this, they're that, they're socially, culturally important, we want access to screens, there aren't screens, we want access to P&A and marketing money, we don't have it, and we're doing all these new media initiatives, we're leading the way, because we will very quickly lead the way in all that stuff, because traditionally we always do. I would really strongly suggest that one of the points that comes out of this working group today is a strong support of DocSpace and maybe an initiative somehow to really review whether you want to work copyleft or not. That's your individual scenario, but I would advise you to do it because it's reality.
Okay, thank you. Okay, two people on this, Valerie and then Tom.
Danielle's comments and encourage you as an industry to really pursue that if you think that's the best mechanism, and sometimes it's tough for funding agencies to always take the lead. Like, generally communities, no matter what genre, come and say we need more money for this, and so you get into that split fight. But if there's an initiative that comes from the industry, then you'll be well positioned to go back to those same sources and say, here's what we're doing and we need this level of support, and it might be more successful. Just a couple things there. I just wanted to let you know that there's a 4 or 5 page, if you're interested, of information on what happened in docs at the CTF in 2006-07, but there were 294 projects, French and English market together, and 30 of those were feature lengths. Now, I appreciate the subtleties, and it's still for TV, but that's where the statistics are this year. Just on the thresholds, again, we are looking at the whole doc genre this year. Thresholds can always be changed. Like everything at the CTF, the complexity of the threshold chart, I think the chart's 6 pages long now, is it? Is that a bit of an exaggeration? You know, 6 pages of the different thresholds and the different genres and the different markets. So they do fluctuate, they do change. There's nothing stopping us from looking at that.
Thank you. Tom? Here's.
Hi. I'm grateful that various members here acknowledge, you know, the NFB's passion and commitment for feature docs, which continues and will continue. It's an important part of what we see the film board as a public sector producer can do. But I've also heard a couple of people say, well, if you're lucky, you can get that. And I think what that, it's not about luck. I mean, what it points to is a number of things. One is limited resources and the enormous pressure. So again, it was said earlier, you know, John Christou said, public institutions will become more important. What it also means is suddenly, you know, there's being a funneling, you know, in the CFTPA, the doc committee says, you know, well, go to the film board. Our resources are in erosion. You know, there isn't going to be any new money from government. We have to think of, and we are, about creative new ways of dealing with that. There's a frustration, I think, in terms of saying, well, you know, the film board is really important, crucial player, and yet can't support everybody. Within that, I have to say, we do have a process that we try to be really transparent about in terms of programming committee and a criteria and so on, which we're revisiting. And in fact, we're looking very hard at in terms of that role and the criteria. And there will be very much a process of consultation with the doc community across the country to be sure that that voice is part of the formulating and even more clearly and more transparently that kind of process. So, and we will continue to be there for future documentaries. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kim. Yeah, just to add another concern, Daniel said Cinéma Libre, you know, disappeared. In fact, they went bankrupt. But in the last year in Quebec, I think there are four distributors, you know, that have been longstanding, 20 years, 25 years, that have closed down or bankrupt also. So there's a real crisis there. Okay, green code. Does everybody have a little badge? So I will ask my Poutine préféré, no, Peter Muntonic, to introduce the subject. You invited that joke, Peter, yourself. Okay, so Peter Muntonic, everybody knows Peter. He's a filmmaker, documentary filmmaker, producer. He's an international consultant. What can I say? Nothing that really moves in documentary around the world, you know, does it without Peter in a certain way.
Okay. Talking about jogging. I would just like to thank Manu for her kind of very capable moderation and active moderator is what I like as well.
So
you are, if you could think yourselves what the most beautiful potato you have, is it the patate bleue? Just let's give her a hand.
Thank you.
Also, to Doc and to the Documentary Organization of Canada and Pop Docs and the NFB for giving us this little platform to maybe shift us away in our thinking up for a bit into kind of the future, perhaps, of media and what we're doing and the world we're...
You have to talk in the mic, Peter.
Doc talk. And the world that we're doing it in. I'd like to just thank the organizations for... having the foresight to invite us. Isn't that self-serving? But, you know, green is hot. It's, and we're not just talking about the NFB logo or the great Jennifer Beichwell film, Manufacturing Landscapes, or some of the many films here at Hot Docs where people are really lining up around the block to see, or Sundance Channel announced here their new strand, which is called The Green, once a week. There, you know, I mean, in Toronto, green is the new black, really. It's, and you know, you got Leonardo on the cover of Vanity Fair with the little polar bear, and you know, things are getting green. And Leonardo di Capriccio or Cappuccino, whatever his name is, he's with that Al Gore film, which is actually not an Al Gore film, it's the David Guggenheim film called Inconvenient Truth, you know. Produced by that Canadian Jeff Skoll under kind of green code principles, which involve, in a certain sense, guilt for the kind of carbon emissions that Al Gore spent around the world and the marketing that Paramount spent around there. So they Jeff Skoll and his crowd of participants sort of bought their carbon offsets and helped finance kind of alternative energy company run by native people in Alaska with that. So Hollywood really is going green. I would think that maybe the documentary industry too can go green and give kind of green concepts. The green, oh, maybe this is Jeff Skoll here. Hey, Jeff. No, it's not Jeff. It's a Canadian mogul feature drama producer. Yeah, okay, we'll get on Skype. Okay, here we go. Yeah, well, now we're in the imagination industry here. So if you can imagine that I'm a Hollywood feature fiction maker, I'll start a channel that, and I'll start smoking an organic cigar, and I'll start, or maybe I'm Robert Lantos, I don't know. I mean, I did start working with him when there were only four of us in the company. They moved to Toronto, and I stayed in Montreal. So you want to make a documentary? Okay, I'm listening. Yeah, I've done docs. Yeah, high concept cooking shows. Yeah, organic nude farmers. Yeah, they're hot. Pitch it to me. Okay, I'll give you 2 minutes. It's called Tipping Point. No, it's called Tipping Point? No, forget about it. It's taken. It's like it's a book or something. No, I haven't read it. No. 3-hour documentary about global gas? No. Melting what? Okay, icebergs. Yeah, okay, let's call it Melting Point. Yeah, sure, yeah. Okay, I'm big on those echo things. I have a hybrid Humvee, yeah. Yeah, sure, I saw that Al Gore film. Unbelievable twaddle, yeah. Undeniable lies, yeah. I'm a big Oscar winner, yeah. I know he didn't do anything for the Earth when he was the second most powerful man in the world, but that's okay. We won't want to call it a documentary now. Way too friggin' earnest. No. We're not making medicine here, you know. Let's call it something real, like divertainment. No boring experts, you know. No, what I want really is like a million real talking penguins, yeah. What do you mean they don't talk? Yeah. I want a million stuffed penguins then. You know, we can get them. We can make them China. The labor's cheap, yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, I know the world's going down. Oh, yeah. Well, no, let's do a soap. No. YouTube, yeah, quickie feature, no. Well, we'll shoot it in Romania, it's cheap, yeah. No special effects, we'll just burn down a forest and build a studio out of styrofoam, and we'll burn down the forest, yeah, the thing. Yeah, but we'll change the concept, forget Tipping Point. The penguins are not good penguins, but they're evil penguins, and they're all dressed in green plastic garbage bags, and they all work for this weird dictator, and he's the king of the polar bears, and he's raving mad because the icebergs are melting, and he's figured out how to hold all the people hostage, and he's putting genetically modified DVDs onto the internet and fills the kids' brains with candy. I'm just
channeling. Apparently you're getting carried away, your partner's
yeah.
Sake.
All of us is just a way to channel us into the real important work that I'm trying to help promote as a supporter for a wonderfully inspirational group of three who in the next 6 minutes will save the world for you. And I just want to call up Mary France Cote, a young producer who really is the inspiration for the Green Code Project.
So it's good we gave Peter like 1 minute. I guess it went fine. So okay, the Green Code Project started. Well, it's a collaborative group, as you can see, composed of documentary filmmakers and sustainability experts. We call it our own micro Kyoto Accord, addressing both the social and ecological issues our industry is facing here in Canada and all over the world. We're currently based in Montreal, and we're working with partners from Canada and around the world. Last year, the Green Code received seed money from the National Film Board of Canada, allowing us to start the research and to create a national NGO called the Green Media Institute, or l'Institut des Médias Verts. We are pleased to announce that they have also committed to contribute to a part of the funding that will help us pursue our work. The enthusiasm we receive has been incredible. And the Green Code has been discussed in important festivals such as ITFA, the AFF in Australia, and many more. We also want to thank Doc and Not Doc for allowing us to launch the Green Code here today. Why did we want to do it? As documentary filmmakers producing film on social and ecological issues, we really felt the need to walk our talk. As we know from almost daily reports on our environmental situation, the most striking being Sir Nicholas Stern report, a former World Bank chief economist who produced an earth-shaking review on the economics of climate change for the British government. I think this went out in like December. It describes climate change as the greatest market failure the world has ever seen. The review estimates that without action, the overall cost of climate change will be equivalent to losing between 5% to 20% of our gross domestic product. But the report also states that by taking action now, costs can be limited to around 1%. The Green Code is our way of taking action now to set our industry up to address the challenge and to take advantage of the opportunities. So I'm going to ask Mitch to
introduce yourself, Mitch.
Hi, I'm Mitch Rhodes. I used to work here in Toronto in the entertainment industry, and now that I think back, that's something we didn't laugh when I lived in Toronto. But I had a mid-career change and went back to school and became an environmentalist and went to Sweden and have my master's in sustainability. Come back to Canada and am prototyping a company called Treadlight Media and how we merge the ideas of filmmaking and sustainability. The media industry has a lot of power and influence in our communities and in our world. And it also has, with the good things, some not so good things. There's been a recent study from UCLA, the Colbert Report. They did a study in Los Angeles and found that the entertainment industry produced more pollution and greenhouse gases than some of the traditional industries like aerospace and hotels and the apparel industry. And so every day we kind of read the papers and see more and more about greening initiatives. The papers this week talked about having to reduce our greenhouse gases by 20% by the year 2020. Well, the government's going to have to put billions of dollars into doing that and achieving those targets. And I believe that we've heard here today that there's no new money, there's no new money. Well, if we get creative, we are very creative and innovative people. If we get creative, I think we could access some of that money. If our industry becomes a leader in prototyping how to shift an industry in their thinking and in their actions, I believe that we could access money, but we have to work together to do that. And so that's the challenge and the proposal that I'm putting out to our industry today, is to get creative, engage the government, and try and access all those billions of dollars that are going to be available for us to reduce our transmissions. Thank you.
Merci. C'est bien. Last.
Okay, so what is the Green Code? It's a set of voluntary eco-actions that encourage ecologically friendly sustainability. Goals we can all buy into, you know, self-selecting levels, suite of options for improvement in our workplaces, using fair trade coffee, eco-friendly suppliers, from reducing waste on location to counting carbon impacts to using production car co-ops, post-consumer recycled paper, etc. Hot Docs became a green coder and this year had their audience award behind the ticket, which is brilliant, you know, instead of having another piece of paper. So, and we also want to work with suppliers like Sony, Panasonic, Apple to engage them in sustainability. The Green Code will be a place to document industry best practices and will facilitate post-secondary institutions and industry players to create case studies to determine industry's ecological footprint in Canada. All of this is leading to eventual certification, just as the American Humane Association, AHA, did with the No Animals Were Harmed in the making of this film. Certification is going to be a means to create standards and deepen our understanding of sustainability, which we need to get there, and to avoid greenwashing. Possibly the Green Code is going to help reduce some of this bureaucracy and all this papers that, as you saw in the little clip we did, that are cutting down more trees and more trees. So if the industry stakeholders work together, and that's what's really important, is that we get behind this and we can attract funding from various sources, because that's where the money's going to be going in the next years, is towards environment and sustainability, foundation sponsorships, university research programs. So the Green Media Institute will be the organization that coordinates this innovative project, thus being at the forefront of the global challenges we face. So we want to, you're going to give
finish.
Recommendations?
Well, I think we just want to sort of make some recommendations for what we can discuss. Is that...
We want to push a forward mandatory budget line at Telefilm Canada, for example, in the Telefilm budget, which will go everywhere else, for offsetting part of our footprint, because we do have a footprint. And as we saw in the Corbett study in California, we have one here too. Start the agencies on designing precise incentives like tax credits, which would be like a green bonus. We're doing some special efforts. We should get back on this. And because the Green Media Institute is going to have to do a lot of work, there's a lot of interest around the world, but we can be a strong, we can be a leader here in Canada and bring this forward at the international level. We would like other people, representatives, to match what NFB has put in, and so we're looking for $25,000 from other partners.
Okay.
Each.
Thank you. Okay, c'est fini?
Yeah.
Oh, merci. Okay. Didn't know you were such a talented actor, Peter. So, so on this, I think everybody has a little green button, and there's also, I think, a documentation that states what it is. Is there anything to add, or is there a consensus about, you know, well, it's what I understand, it's your initiative. It's a Canadian initiative. Great, great, great. Okay. Yes, here, one.
Just say that I've been very glad because we've been doing some thinking at the film board about as a public sector institution being responsible and thinking about that. So we were very glad to work together with them. But in talking to colleagues in the industry, when I talked to someone like Judith Brosseau at Astral and Bob Colbert at CTV and Paul Lewis at Discovery, very receptive at all those levels in terms of thinking about this and about the impact. And I don't know if one of the things if you mentioned here is there is an enormous, at the end of the day, an economic benefit not in terms of reduction of waste, increasing efficiency, and an ability to kind of really save money and again use that in terms of productions.
Great. Yes, one here in the back.
Hi, Judy Holm, Markham Street Films. I'm a producer, and I think this is a great idea, and we already try to do a lot of these things. I would make one suggestion under the carrying yourself around, point number three, try to hire local people. We've all been talking about tax credits and how hard they are to get and hold on to, and I would encourage some working together with provincial tax credit agencies so that we could do that.
Okay, good. Anybody else? Yes, here? Just here.
Hi, it's Michaela McDermott. I'm from Vancouver. I haven't read this, so if it's in here, forgive me, but it would sure be nice to have a green code for applications for all the different funds, broadcasters, whatever. Think how much paper, the fax with one signature that goes back and another fax goes on and on and on.
I think everyone understands. There's somebody that...
Hi there. Joseph Lalonde at the Canadian Television Fund. I hear what you're saying about the amount of paper that's submitted, and this isn't particular to the Canadian Television Fund, but it ties into that in the sense that there's a service that Telefilm offers, eTelefilm. I had a meeting recently with the folks at Telefilm, and we were talking about, you know, communication and broadcast reports and doing it all electronically, and they mentioned some statistic about how many producers are submitting things via eTelefilm, and actually the numbers are shockingly low. eTelefilm allows you to submit documents electronically, so that would cut down on paper waste. I'm not saying it would cut down on the number of documents, paper or electronic, otherwise, but just as far as the environment goes, you might want to check into eTelefilm as a possibility for reducing the amount of waste. Thanks.
Danielle here.
Hi, I just wanted to mention a couple of things that we're doing that I wanted to fill people in on. We're working on a new thing called opensourcecinema.org. So the objective of that is basically, again, working in a copyright non-exclusive process to work with filmmakers around the world on principal issues of importance and to be able to collect your images and work and edit right off the internet. Because all that stuff is there now, so there's getting less and less permissible reasons to need to go around the world to film things that our Brazilians know more about in Brazil and make those collaborations, and this is called open source. And so we've accessed that with opensourcecinema.org. And the other one is we're doing some work on a thing called Homeless Nation, and the objective is to put media tools at street level. And so we need all your, and the best green access is to reuse. It's better than to recycle. Reuse, reclaim. So we need all your old tapes, and we need all your old cameras, especially your good old cameras, and all that equipment and computers too. Give your computers to Reboot Canada, or you can give them straight to the Homeless Nation, and that's homelessnation.org, and you can find out how to contact, because I know your closets are full of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. One more, Peter?
Well, I saw Wayne Clarkson yesterday with his bicycle and a bicycle helmet coming in here. I don't know if he's here, Telefilm's here, but certainly he's walking or biking his talk. But I really think the kind of main recommendation, if we're going to distill them all into a couple from each of these types of provocations, is to require Telefilm in the template budget that we all use to put a line in there asking us to calculate what our environmental footprint is. It's probably 1% or something. And to put it in, we're giving the money to lawyers and to banks, as we've seen. Why not give it to the earth?
Okay, I think that, you know, the issue has been well addressed. Congratulations for the initiative. It can take many ways to do it, but I think people from the institutions are here, from the broadcasters, so you've all heard the message. You'll probably get also by email the declaration. It's called a declaration, and we'll see in a year from now who has picked up on it. Okay? Let's give us that deadline and see. And in 1 year, we'll see where we're at. Okay? Thank you very much. One last... I know, you're a wonderful audience, by the way. You're very disciplined. One last issue, which is not the least, it's copyright. And to make the presentation, Kerwin Cox, who's spoken, Kerwin is a documentary activist, I would say. He's a researcher, he's also a scriptwriter, and probably one of the most involved person in Canada in the documentary milieu. So, Kerwin.
Thank you, Monique. I was on a panel a couple of days ago talking about copyright, some of which some of you may know about. I'm just going to review some of the things that Doc has been doing and maybe look at the future. The first thing is copyright is something we all love to ignore, but it's pretty darn important. And, of course, when it comes to wanting revenue from copyrighted sources or worrying about negotiating archival rights and all the rest of it, then it gets to be even more important. And there's been a trend among the fiction filmmakers and producers, and I'll distinguish between fiction and nonfiction. It's an exceedingly important distinction because the copyright needs or demands of fiction filmmaking and fiction producing is quite different from nonfiction. And you've got to keep that in mind constantly in order to figure out, you know, what's the best thing to do. Fiction filmmakers would see perpetual copyright terms to be in their interest. They would like to see, a Sonny Bono act that goes on forever. We all know that whenever Mickey Mouse is about to go into public domain, the U.S. Congress extends the term of copyright. Copyright used to be 14 years plus a renewal of 14 years. Now it's about 95 years. And so the idea is that if you are a big company or a group of big companies like the Motion Picture Association of America or the Recording Industry of America, then you lobby your politicians to continually extend copyright because that is your biggest profit center. And then you hire teams of lawyers to beat up on people and you keep going. For fiction filmmakers, this makes some economic sense. For nonfiction filmmakers, it's a problem because we use reality in order to make our work. So we need access to archives to make an historical documentary. If we can't access archival material, go ahead. We've also wanted to reform in the unlocatable copyright owner regime. So if you try really hard to find somebody that owns copyright, and of course sometimes you phone up somebody and you say, do you own such and such? And after hesitation they say, of course I do, it's $10,000. You know, and then you find out that maybe they don't. Anyway, unlocatable copyright owner, we should have a regime for doing that. We also wanted to have clearance practices standardized so that they are very clear and that everybody can know what's going on. And we also wanted to encourage support for archives, for public archives, so that they will make things easier to access and not hold things back on the basis of simple financial reasons. There are a lot of other issues, of course. Those are the key ones. And this letter was signed by 140 filmmakers. And it's quite a fabulous list of filmmakers because it includes people like Roman Kreuter and Colin Lowe, people that you may recall made some tremendous films. It also included a lot of Francophones like Monique Simard and Denis Arcand. It included people like Peter Pearson. It included all kinds of people. It even included Kevin McMahon, who stood up here a little bit earlier, all across the country, Betsy Carson and so forth. And so all of these filmmakers got together, sent the letter to these ministers, And then we got a bureaucrat that came back and said, are you crazy? You're filmmakers and you want changes in the Copyright Act? So we said yes. Okay. Our next step is insurance. We feel that we have to, with fair use in the U.S., by changing that, they've gotten people to lower the insurance rates in the U.S. for making documentaries. We're now working to do that here. And I was just talking with somebody from the International Documentary Association in Los Angeles, and I was saying if we can get the documentary filmmakers here to band together to reduce rates for production, E&O, and liability, why don't we do it internationally because it's the same insurance companies? And she said, sure, and then the Italian documentary people are here. Let's get them in on it. So my feeling is in terms of reducing insurance, we should just take over the whole thing and do the whole world and really have a good time. Okay, that's it.
Merci. Good.
Membership of 3,200 in 52 countries. Most of our constituent are independent filmmakers under the United States regime, which means not much of government funding. This last 2 years, out of frustration mostly, is we have come together and with the Center for Social Media, work toward creating a documentary filmmaker statement of best practice and fair use. It was a huge accomplishment for us to be able to do this because so many of our films, really, our stories have no frontiers. They travel, they go all over the world, and sometimes what happened in one country not necessarily is respected in another. And we wanted to have a document that helped us understand what it is that we're dealing with when we're dealing with copyrighted material. We also have a bill right now in the Congress, which passed the first floor on orphan works, which is what you were talking about. And we're hoping that this bill is going to go through this year. And what happens in one country can be used as a model for many other countries to build on. So we are here to say we would like to collaborate in any way that we can to have an international languages between organization, so that we as producers of independent producers can come together and fight for these fair use rights. We also, as you said, for the first time in our history, were able to negotiate an insurance in the United States for fair use at quite a low cost. So they have identified, this company called Media Professional Insurance, have identified a list of lawyers who actually will take your project, look at it, and say, yes, this is fair use, we cover this, we cover it internationally, and we move forward. And again, the same thing is, I think that we need collaboration between all the countries and come together as producers, as independent voices, so that our work is respected, protected, and we keep making it. Thank you.
Merci. Thank you very much. Okay.
Can I say one word? I'm Sandra Rouche, the executive director of the International Documentary Association, and you can get a copy of this outside from us. We also have it on the homepage of our website, which is www.documentary.org. And we also publish a magazine. We're a membership organization. So please check our website, and we'll also hand out some of these when you go out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, on this issue? I think we have to appreciate that we have not only producers, but also broadcasters, because they know the cost now of archives and the cost of legal fees, etc. So if we say there's no new money coming in or not enough new money, well, let's try to cut down on a certain number of expenses that don't give any quality to the works we are directing or producing or broadcasting. So if we evaluate, it's between 5 to 10%, and that archives we know are something that is a skyrocketing price now, and how can we make documentaries if we can't have access to archives? This is unthinkable. So I think this very good initiatives. Does anybody want to? I think everybody agrees. I think there's a consensus about this. Kerwin, this is a first maybe for you, a consensus. Wow. Okay. So this brings us, I know everybody's tired, but I've lost my co-resume. I don't know where Tom is. Well, anyhow. So the idea of this summit was to
really bring people together from Canada and also friends from the United States, or I think Brazilian friends are somewhere around here also. And, you know, in fact, people like I was talking with Brazilians this week, they said, you're so lucky in Canada. You can produce and get your financing in your own country. Things are working, you know, and it's true that a lot of people are envious of our situation. Our American friends are, that's for sure, because there's no public funding. And that's it. But here, our system is based on that public funding. There were studies made by different associations a year or two ago, at least at PFTQ, and that the part of, if you add up all the public funding, different forms of public funding, well, it's up to 70-75% of the funding, if not more. So, which brings us back to the major theme or issue that was addressed by Nathalie Barthon this morning, and also with the numbers we got from Samantha saying, well, things are going not too bad. They're going quite well. You know, production is increasing. We're selling. People are watching. We could do better, of course, but things are in there. And we saw how the proportion of the support from the CTF. We saw the proportion of support from televisions, etc. Now, if this is completely shaken, or if it disappears, what will happen? I think that's one first question that has been addressed here. Secondly, what must be changed? And I think Valerie was very, I told her, I congratulated her at the break. I said, you're very direct. This is the first time we have such a, you know, direct intervention from the head of the CTF. And I think it's very well appreciated, knowing that it's not a difficult, you know, not an easy job to do. But then again, what in our system should be changed to address the issues of the future? And a certain number of things have been, you know, raised here. And I think the question of new funding or redirecting money to fund projects that will go on other platforms is something that has to be raised. Again, I think here people have, well, it's my sentiment, but I think it's shared, that our public broadcasters are essential, our public institutions are essential. In that many ways, the CTF is a creation, public creation, and that the CTF money is public money, and that we have to consider it as part of our public institutions. The NFB, of course, in the documentary is a world, you know, people envy Canadians to have a national film board. It's, I think, the only one left in the world. So, not enough money, but still, things can be changed there too, so that we make most of the money that's there to go into films and into quality documentaries. Features, I think, again, everybody agrees that there has to be more done. We have to convince people, and we have to create the conditions for that genre to re-exist in Canada. You know, something that always concerns me is, are we winning enough prizes in international festivals? Are, you know, because the documentary world was a, maybe a smaller world before, but Canada was, you know, up front there, of the best of the best, and we would win all the time. And fortunately, documentary has exploded around the world. It's extraordinary. I know a bit more Latin America. In Argentina, it's like blooming everywhere. So there's competition there outside, and that's good. But are we up to that competition? Do we want to be up to that competition? I think, and that's true for any kinds of genres of documentaries. Well, that's my summary. I think that the last issues that were addressed, for example, the copyright, I think that I feel there's a consensus. Of course, I think that people agree that we have to do our own bit part on green environment. Then again, and I'm doing this because you weren't there. So you come up. I've done mine, my bit of resume, and you can do yours. But anyhow,
so good they not.
Okay, no, and I think there's a concern also about educational televisions. I think, you know, there was a bit of a little debate there between with people from TV Ontario and the producers. But we always remember that CBC, Radio-Canada, and these educational broadcasters have specific mandates. And sometimes it's hard for them, you know, to realize them with the means that are given to them. And for us documentary film producers, they're essential to our survival. And that's it. I've done
it. Just add a couple of points. Yeah. While you look at that.
Okay. I didn't resume what everybody said, though. Okay.
Well, no, ça va. Well, interesting range of what we could cover in a short period and things that remain to be covered. Some of, obviously, touched on but not really explored in any depth, which is going to really have the enormous impact on everyone, which is the digital future, the multi-platform realities, all of that. Some of that will be addressed this afternoon in the Doc Agora sessions, and there'll be a starting of an exploration. But I find, I mean, the film board, we've been doing things in this area and pushing, trying to push boundaries in different ways, whether through mobile, other kinds of cross-platform. But the funding system, again, if it's in theatrical, it's been set up to, in terms of television, here too, there isn't a kind of adequate, there's the Bell New Media Fund, there is some new media funds, but there's the worlds haven't coalesced yet, and I find that doc producers and filmmakers haven't fully wrapped their heads around this reality, which is going to profoundly alter our futures. And I think in all sorts of ways which we don't know, but certainly in terms of ways that are can be enormously positive. One of the things that emerged out of Samantha's figures, which I don't think anyone remarked on, which I thought was kind of interesting, were short films, $81 million, more than theatrical in terms of the figures. And short films are driving, in terms of video on the net, mobile, cross-platform. And again, when I joined the film board 5 years ago and I said, we're going to start making short films, and we said, but no one wants them. And it was like, well, it's the only way we can really make effective ways of working with emerging filmmakers. And we'll worry about where it goes. It just exploded suddenly very quickly, and there's a kind of a whole massive drive in terms of short films. It hasn't been explored here. You know, we've gone to the large end in terms of the features. We haven't looked at something that I think is going to be absolutely crucial to the future of documentary filmmaking as well, which is really important. I think what was also interesting in terms of Samantha's figures is, and it keeps coming up, is how anchored this is in terms of an industry, in terms of how crucial it is, how important it is, and both in terms of the foreign sales, the ability to attract interest. And I know there are companies that have built, you know, very, very lucrative businesses. And what that speaks to is I think there's been something of a false dichotomy here between the industrial and the market-driven and the one-off POV, as if somehow they were mutually exclusive and that an industrial, an industry cannot somehow contain both. It's not so much that it can contain both, it actually needs it. It needs that ability to have that range of work, because when we work with a filmmaker like Rohan Fernando, for example, who is really gifted and he can come and do a special kind of doc, well, how is he going to live and earn a living? How is he going to kind of learn craft and trade? And the ability to do that, to go between worlds, is absolutely crucial to the health of this industry. So it's something that has to be nurtured, but ensuring the space is there for the one-offs, because that, too, is crucial, because without that part of it, the industrial part will fall by the wayside as well, because it won't be fed with that creative energy and talent and renewal of vision that the one-offs of the feature docs provide. Just a quick point that in terms of, you know, we've mentioned we work on feature docs, but we've had real collaborations with different broadcasters who, you know, Bob Culbert mentioned he's really focused, and, you know, he knows his audience, he needs that 1 hour. But when we've worked together on docs where really it's being driven also by a feature thing,
it's been the most amazing collaboration in terms of saying, yeah, understand that, leaving the space for that and being able to allow that to happen. So again, there are collaborators and people work there. I mean, Rudy has always done that, and Manufactured Landscapes, which was has done very well at the box office here and will be released in the States, has picked up awards, again, which Rudy kind of started, which we got very involved with. Again, it was about a theatrical life. So although the funding is an issue, it's not necessarily an issue in terms of the partnership, a creative partnership with broadcasters about that. I think that's it.
Yeah.
All right.
So thank you, everybody, that accepted our invitation. Valerie wanted to say something.
I just have one more thing to say. I just have to say that a lot of people put a lot of work into this, and the people who came up and presented and went through the thinking that they did in terms of just trying to really say, how can we present in a very short presentation crucial, critical kind of points of view to stir debate. And so thank you to all of them because you've done a tremendous job. And I just also want to echo Peter's thanks to Monique, because Monique, c'est merveilleuse. C'est vraiment la reine. Vive la reine, Monique.
Okay, now,
One more thing, because behind the scenes, working and organizing and getting this together at the film board was Deborah Drysdale, who did just an amazing job in terms of this. So, Deborah, thank you. Stand up.
Yeah. Okay, one last thing, because I had promised Valerie that she wanted to say something before the end, and I forgot you. You should have said, Monique, like this. I have to do my job well till the end. And Nathalie, okay.
Let you all know a number of issues that were touched on today are on the agenda of working groups for the CTF, and they include the new platform policy, number one, reviewing the special initiative stream, which is our development program, all the genres, the EIP program, regional initiatives, producer safeguards, the kids and youth study, and the forthcoming doc study. We're looking at the calculation methodology on the BPEs, creating an appeal mechanism, and one big thing we're looking on is our assessment processes, because right now if a project is $20,000 to $18 million, we do exactly the same process, and we think we can streamline that. There are working groups that will be starting in May right after the upcoming board meeting, going right through till October for the new guidelines for next year. Those are generally for board members, although in the last year we have brought professionals in from outside of the actual board of the CTF to give us advice. It's been a bit of a struggle, but we're doing it. So if there are issues you want to raise specifically, the phone is always on. We've just moved. The phones weren't working till last night at 11 o'clock, but now on your phone you can get through again. And please, like, don't ever hesitate to raise the issues. Raise them direct with the staff. You're familiar with myself, and we make sure those will get fed into that analytical process for this year. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. A lot of you will maybe, some of you will be called upon by Heritage that they're consulting. They're going across the country. They're going about Radio-Canada, CBC, and other issues. They phone up individuals. It's not necessarily through your association. So if they do so and you have something to say, you can check with Doc, with whatever your group or of interest is to say, you know, so we can coordinate. And if we go and speak up, say, you know, same things. We're in the same direction. Okay, thank you very much. Nathalie, tu voulais dire quelque chose?
Well, yeah. I just wanted to say, yeah, it's a great discussion and it's great to see the NFB and CTF so engaged. But I just feel that we can't wait until next Hot Docs to do it again, and I'm wondering about the follow-up to this. I feel the need for, it's not going to end up on the front page of the Globe and Mail, but some kind of a statement that we can at least refer back to after this, which sort of gives a broad, that we can pretty much all endorse, that gives, you know, a point of reference about what we've been talking, the big issues we've been talking about this morning. And also, some kind of a follow-up, working, not working group, because there are lots of groups, but a network, a decision that we are going to, in the next few months, get together again with our associations and work out strategy, because the next budget is not next April, it's next February, and the decisions are made in the fall, and everything fits into that time frame. Okay. No?
Deborah?
Well, I'll just
That's a very good point, Natalie, and yes, that's what we are hoping to do. There will be notes that will be drawn up after today that will be both on the Hot Docs website, the NFB website. I hope that paper circulated for anyone who wanted it and left their email. We will send it. Does anyone know where the list is? Okay, so it's at the end, so perhaps you can write them down. We'll email them to you. And then out of the 5 or 6 key issues that maybe we can address, then, yes, the NFB certainly undertakes to start making sure with the APFTQ, DOC, l'Observatoire, the CFTPA, to try and organize some table rondes or roundtables to try and discuss these issues and then move them forward. So hopefully maybe next year at the DOC Summit we'll be able to congratulate ourselves that some of these issues were resolved. So we'll get started as soon as we can once the notes are ready and posted.
I see a raised hand. This will be... never finish. Come on. Yes, there. Okay, yes. Well, people are signing up there, so just go in that direction, the ones who haven't signed up. Thank you very much. Have a good Hot Docs Festival for still 3 days. Thank you for being here. Bye-bye.